Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Maura Z, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, the 27th of September, and we are reading in the Big Book on page 151, the third paragraph, which starts, "The less people tolerated us." And today's readers are Patricia M.S., 12 Steps, Alexis H., 12 Traditions, Deb W., Stacy C., and Leslie M. reading the texts. The reference numbers for yesterday, the 26th of September, Tuesday, 7 a.m., share ID, 10,474, 10,474, and yesterday's 10 a.m. share ID, 10,476. 10476. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous to those who still suffer. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Patricia M.S. to please read the 12 steps of OA.
Okay. Can I be heard more?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. This is Patricia M.S., the 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to food addicts and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thanks for allowing me to be of service this morning. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you, Patricia. I'll now ask Alexis H. to read the 12 traditions of OA.
Hi, Maura. Am I coming through clearly?
Yes, thank you.
All right. This is Alexis H., compulsive overeater in Michigan. And these are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me read.
Thank you, Alexis. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. And then once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the person speaking, should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 151 with the third paragraph that starts, "The Less People Tolerated Us." We'll be reading that paragraph and commenting on it. And so I would now like to ask Deb W. if she would get us started by reading.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Deb W., recovered in Oklahoma. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. As we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, approval. Momentarily, we did. Then would come oblivion, the awful awakening, to face the hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand, and I promise you, I understand what that paragraph is about. You know, I think one of the most perplexing memories, or when I look back in retrospect, of what I did as a real compulsive eater is the number of times that I replay how things used to be. You know, I used to be able to eat this. You know, I used to be able to wear this size clothing. You know, I used to be able to, you know, and I'm trying to continue to get control of this food, this behavior that sends me into the four horsemen, into the craziness, you know, into the binge, you know, into the place that I can't say no, that I keep seeing myself and my hearing my mind say, let's go back. I want to go back. That memory of that food, that bite that I had, that I have to put on my list of no, I can't have, as long as I'm ingesting them, that there's that replay. Well, why not? I can't remember why I can't have this. And it could have been just the day before that I sunk down into the depths of, you know, despair. But that next day, I forget exactly. Now, why is it? You know, my mind is in denial of what is going on with my present state. And the present state is that I cannot control it. And my mind is also in denial of the relationship, the results of these binges. The times that I call my employer and say, I'm sick, I can't be there today, when really I just want to be alone and eat and watch TV. My family, who I can't show up for the games of the kids or the social activities because I'm overweight and I feel yucky. My emotional is foggy. And the ups and the downs and the highs and the lows and the depression. Yes, depression can be a situation even in recovery that we have to take medication for. But the most of it, the heaviest part of it, settled. You know, I take depression medication, yet my depression is nowhere near what it was back when I was eating and stuffing on the food. I couldn't see the connection of the food and my mood. You know, the food and how I handle things that come up in life. And after the steps, living in 10 and 11 and 12, I get to look at the real culprit, the real reason that I turn to food is that life is unmanageable and I needed a program. I needed a way to process every one of the interactions that make me feel uncomfortable. And I am full of, you know, emotion and uncomfortable. And after the spiritual awakening and it settles down, then I can actually work and live in 10, 11, and 12. And so with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Deb W. And listing your name but one time, please. Who would like to share on the third paragraph?
Tina S.
Matt M. Tina S.
Larry
Nicole K. P. Larry
Nessa
K.
R. Jackie
Nessa
B.
Nessa R. Jackie B. Let's go with that. I've got Matt M., Tina S., Nicole P., Larry K., Nessa R., and Jackie B. Matt M., please go ahead and start us off.
Thank you, Maura, for your service. Good morning, everyone. This is Matt M., Compulsive Eater. From New Jersey. I cannot picture life without food. It's funny, like when I first came in the rooms, I thought, I'm never going to be able to eat pizza again. I'm never going to be able to eat cake and cookies again. I couldn't look past the perimeter of the food, like, you know, and sometimes I still think that, you know, I can someday I'll be able to eat those things. And it was very lonely in that bitter morass of self-pity. What, I'm not going to be able to go out with my friends anymore. I'm not going to be able to do stuff with them because they're going out to eat. You know, it really is a jumping off place. I wish for it. There were some times I wished I do have depression. My depression got so bad that I did wish for it to end. I didn't want to have this disease. I didn't ask for it. So why, you know, why was I stuck with it? Why should everybody else eat normally or have one bite or one cookie or one this or one that? And me, I'd have to have the whole sleeve or the whole bag or the whole box. And I would still look at people when they would eat, like, one bite of something. I was like, are you crazy? Why don't you eat the whole thing, you know? Insanity, you know? I sometimes still think I can get away with half a dozen drinks, but I know I can't because I know that I'll be right back under the eight ball again, trying to get back up, coming out of the bitter morass of self-pity from taking a binge. And in those times, it's not easy to deal with. But, you know, I know food's everywhere. I have to deal with food, you know? It's not, food doesn't have to deal with me. And I'm grateful today that I can see I don't need certain foods in my life. I've had my share, my fill of them a long time ago. And I don't need to try new combinations of A, B, or C for me to realize that it's all the same thing deep down. It's all sugar, it's all wheat, it's all flour. And I'm grateful I don't have to partake in those. If it's a choice, I choose to not to do that today. With that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Tina S., it is your turn, followed by Nicole P.
Thanks, Maura, for your service. Tina S., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic in Florida. I can really relate, and I certainly earned the seat that I sit in and listen on the line today. And, you know, what I really get from this for myself is, you know, I withdrew from society, and I don't know that people tolerated me less, but I know that I tolerated them less for sure. I wanted to be by myself. I like that it talks about, you know, king alcohol, you know, because food certainly ruled my life every day. And whether I ate it or didn't, I didn't know what the day was going to bring, you know, because if I ate the day before, I was dieting today. So, and then it talks about the loneliness, you know, settling down, you know, and becoming blacker. You know, that was my life. You know, it's been several one day at a time that I haven't lived this life, but I certainly remember when I think about the words, the way it's described, you know, ever becoming blacker. And, you know, and then the oblivion, you know, and then to awaken to face the hideous four horsemen. That was so true for me, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. You know, and I was the unhappy eater, you know, and I certainly understand. And today I think that's my greatest gift, that when somebody comes in the room, we had a woman last night comes in the room and shares this stuff, I so understand. You know, and we have a way out, you know, that we all agree on, that one day at a time, you know, practicing these principles, working the 12 steps for freedom, for the transformation is my solution. And with a power greater than myself, I have that opportunity daily. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Tina S. Nicole P., it's your turn, followed by Larry K.
Good morning, everyone. This is Nicole P., a very, very grateful compulsive reader, recovered from Georgia. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society. I wrote, the less people refused to join my pity party, the more isolated I became. I thought the world revolved around me, that, you know, if I'm having a bad day, everyone else should be too, because, you know, poor me. Victim me, feel sorry for me. And I would get angry that, you know, my own best friends, I'm like, how could you take their side? And they would tell me something that I learned in these 12 steps. Well, what did you do? And what were your actions in the situation? And I'd be like, oh, don't know if I want to talk about that. Just listen to me complain. And it wasn't until coming to this program where I was like, oh, they're absolutely right. To the point where I had to ask myself, were they in a 12-step program? King alcohol. I'll never forget a person said this, and it rang true in my life. Anything that controls you is your master, and you're a slave to whatever controls you. And for me, food controlled my life. All I thought about was food, to the point where I didn't even enjoy moments. I would go places and travel, and I can seldomly tell you what I did in those places, but I can tell you every food I ate from beginning to end. And that, to me, shows me before program, speaking of here in this sentence where it says, life. I don't believe I ever had one before program. It wasn't until getting to actually know God. I knew of him. We had a very surface relationship. It wasn't until I introduced myself to him and I said, you know what, I'm okay with you driving my life because I haven't been doing a good job. And when I think that he needs my help, he sweetly tells me, I got this. But, you know, it's that whole letting go of this false sense of control. Because if I had the control, I wouldn't need a program, would I? So, you know, that is a humbling thing. The four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Oh, yeah. I was that person. I looked like I had it all together on the outside, but I was a mess. And coming to program, especially so young, I had this thought that, oh, I can manipulate and I could get away with what I wanted to get away with. And I had all the time in the world because I'm young and, you know, I have so much to live for. So if I just work this good diet, I'll be fine. And I am happy to say, and at the time I didn't feel this way, it not only did the diet not work, it never will work. And
time.
Thank you. And I am happy that today I can say that my higher power is my best friend. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Nicole P. Larry K., it's your turn, and followed by Nessa R.
Good morning, Maura. This is Kim G. from South Jersey. Good morning, all. Okay. No, it's Larry K. The let's see. So, you know, so here we see Bill beginning the chapter by summarizing alcoholism, you know, King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm. He's describing the advancement of, of this disease as the four horsemen: terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. And these are the points that Bill's driving home over and over again throughout the book. And, you know, when we look at where did Bill hear about the four horsemen, you know, I can only speculate that it's probably likely. I mean, he was involved with the early Oxford group movement and the Christian interpretation back then. The four horsemen were identified as death, famine, war, and conquest. You know, all things I'm reminded that are indeed cunning, baffling, and powerful, just like our disease, you know, this spiritual malady. And if you investigate further, you know, we see that even in artwork, the four horsemen are represented in different aspects of the same tribulation. A tribulation is a cause of great trouble or distress, and that's, you know, that's been the case for me. And would you not agree that this covers our battle as tethered denizens or residents of the mad realm of food? You know, I mean, either food is purchased and owned by you, or rather, you are owned, tethered, subjugated to it. You know, make no mistake, you don't control the food. If you're like me, it controls you when you come here. You know, either you're the king or the food is the king. And honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, well, these are the traits that, you know, that I needed. And I don't know, perhaps we see them as indispensable. And for me, true surrender is a process by which we cease resistance. You know, we lay down the weapon of false pride. I needed to do that. We capitulate. We give up. And it really goes against the grain here, because I don't want to capitulate to anyone or anything. You know, but it was time for me to wave the white flag in the face of these four horsemen, because I knew that the food, although I purchased it at the local store, the food really purchased me. It owned me. It controlled me. I had no control over it. I needed a spiritual transformation in order to be pulled from the quicksand. You know, you wave around in the quicksand, you'll go down faster. You really need to be saved from the quicksand, quite literally. You need to be pulled out, and that's what happened to me. And I'm Kim G. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry K. Nessa R., it is your turn, followed by Jackie B.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Nessa R. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. So step one says, admitted we were powerless over food and our lives have become unmanageable. And, you know, it's often misunderstood or not understood at all. You know, what does unmanageability mean? And to me, nothing describes unmanageability better than the four horsemen: terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. If I'm feeling these, then my life is unmanageable. And I was tormented by these four horsemen, whether I was in the food or whether I was in a diet. You know, if I was in the food, every time I'd had a binge or a purge or a binge and a purge, I would be terrorized by these. And if I was not in the food, I was terrorized by having to go through life, by having to cope with whatever was going on without my crutch. And so, you know, there was really no escape for me, no escape from terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. But, you know, the good news is that I don't live like this anymore, because now I'm not a subject of king's food. I have found a different king, a kingdom was always there, just not accessible to me. And how did I find this king whom I call God? You know, it was very simple, not easy, but very simple. You know, just put down the food honestly, clearly, absolutely, and entirely, and then work the steps as outlined in this big book. And that's it. That's all I had to do. You know, I don't have to live in fear of the food anymore because it doesn't matter to me anymore. You know, I actually get this question often. Two questions, actually, I get often. One is, do you ever have an unpeaceful meal? And the true and honest answer is no, because it is very clear what it is that I can and cannot eat and how much I can eat at one meal. You know, I weigh and measure my food. My trigger foods are black and white. There are no gray areas. But the most important thing is that my mind is not playing games on me, trying to convince me that this time it's going to be different, that this time I will be able to eat these things. And that I was only able to achieve, again, by putting down the food and by working the steps. And the other question that I'm always asked is, don't I feel deprived? You know, like knowing that I'll never have chocolate again.
Time.
Thank you. Knowing that I'll never have cheesecake again. And the answer again is no. It's no, because it doesn't matter. What I have now, access to this wonderful king that gives me all the sense of ease and comfort I need, is so much better than all the chocolate in the world. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Nessa R. Jackie B., it is your turn.
Hi, this is Jackie B. Can I be heard?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, everyone, for your shares and for the people that do service and Maura. This is Jackie B. from the Bronx. Very grateful, very willing, and amazed. Every day, each day, the program becomes more amazing to me when my life is fuller. Doesn't mean that everything is rosy. Doesn't mean that I've got $1 million in the bank and I've got the perfect 15-year-old and a husband of almost 21 years, wonderful. No, what it means is I have a daily reprieve. It means that today I took my food, it's done, I don't think about it. Now what can I do for the world? What can I do for my recovery by giving away my recovery to other people? I can tell you that you stick with this program. I can tell you that may not like everything in this program. You may not like everybody in this program. However, if you work the program the way the big book tells you, which is first identify those foods that trigger the craving, that causes the obsession, and then after that, once you've did that, then your mind clears up. When your mind clears up, that's when the work starts. It starts when you start working the steps with another compulsive overeater that's gone a little ahead of you, and then you work it together. And the amazing thing is that now I can walk. Now I can clean my body. Now I can say yes. I like this, I don't like that, and if I feel uncomfortable about emotions and feelings, I do not go to a bakery box, I do not go to a candy store, I do not go to a fried place. What I do is say, I don't feel so hot emotionally, and I go and say, can I do a 10-step? Can I do my 11-step? Hey, you have a minute? Can I talk to you? Today, I admit what makes me uncomfortable so I don't have to go in a bag or a box. What I can tell you is that let us love you now by saying, hey, we'll help you if you're really desperate enough. We've got the solution here. It's in the book. Read it. Ask for help. Reach out. Do service. Do service. That's the main thing. Service keeps this strong. That's why I'm here over 25 years. I only have recovery 13 and a half months. But I am here 25 years to tell you it works if you work it. And thank you, and I pass. I pass.
Thank you, Jackie B. Thank you. It takes me a second to unmute. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay, so I just want to put a reminder out there that you have no requirements for sharing. So if you've never shared before, feel free to put your name out there. And one name at a time, please. Who would like to share on the third paragraph on page 151 that starts with the less people tolerated us?
Barbara B.
Roxanne.
Janet
S. Leah M.
Jackie G.
Janet
Barbara D. Leah M. Did I hear Russ M? Did I hear Russ M early on?
Yep. Russ M.
Okay. Okay.
Devorah S.
Reva B.
Lisa B.
Carrie N.
Devorah.
Barbara
Lisa.
Jeanette F.
Jeanette.
Vaca O.
Okay, all right, let's go with that. I know I missed a whole boatload of you guys, and I'm so sorry. I'll tell you what I got here. I have Barbara D, Leah M, Russ M, Devorah S, Lisa B, and Jeanette F. Barbara D, will you get us started, please? Barbara D. Or was it Barbara E?
I think it's Barbara C.
Okay, Barbara
That's
C, okay. Please. Alphabet soup, please go ahead. Thank you.
I'm Barbara C, and I'm compulsive overeater from Virginia and hi to Mara and everybody there. love everything I've been hearing on these lines. And this particular passage, I so agree with what was said earlier that, yeah, I was the person who thought everything was supposed to come my way, and what I would do is turn to the food as my, it was my comforter. It was like, it always made me feel better. It was a joke because, you know, it would make me feel sick later on. I wouldn't consciously be aware of it. You know, I'd be pouring all this stuff down my throat. I look at it now and I think to myself, how did I do that and not, you know, get totally sick? And I guess I did get thoroughly sick because, you know, I have so many problems in the past with my eyes, with my nose, and I've gotten 20, 30 pounds of weight from all the stuff that I poured into my body, and I'm kind of mad at myself. And I really look at this program and I go, you know what? This is the answer. I know it. And I understand. I've got to work it one day at a time, but I'm also like trying now to get it fixed. Like, I want a solution. I want to be cured. I want to graduate. I kept telling somebody that, and they're like, nope, you don't ever graduate from this program, you know. So I'm here to learn to get everything I can out of what you guys are telling me, and I love listening to this meeting. So I just wanted to chime in and tell you that I am really enjoying this, and thank you so much for allowing me to be here. So I'll pass.
Thank you, Barbara. C, as in cat. Leah M., it is your turn, followed by Russ M.
Thank you very much. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. You know, I remember my disease started at a very young age, and I remember even at the age of 7 or 8, before people weren't tolerating me, so to speak, you know, I would get on my bicycle after having scrounged around for some money, having looked in the newspaper to see the times of the local theater, and I would make sure and I would calculate the amount of money I had and the amount of time I needed in order to, you know, purchase my binge foods, sit in that dark theater and await, you know, the movie to come on screen. And it was perfect for me. You know, it was darkness. It was isolation. It was sedation, medication. It was a numbing out. And that was just the beginning of my disease. You know what I mean? That was just the beginning. You know, I realize as I reflect on my eating career, it wasn't just my efforts to hide and sneak and isolate my, you know, with my binge foods. And it wasn't just kind of trying to avoid the rebuke of other people about it. And it wasn't just the need to quickly, you know, eat my binge foods in peace. You know, as my disease progressed, my compulsive overeating and the whole addiction process became a turning inward and, turning away from the usual means of interaction with people, the usual way of living life on life's terms. You know, it became obvious to me as my disease progressed that there was something I was trying to quiet, you know, an unquiet soul, so to speak, that the contents of those bags and boxes held out an easier, softer way. I had a rough time living. I had a rough time living, and yet I thought that self-sufficiency, and turning my back on relationship with other people and certainly with God was the way to go. And it also became obvious in my disease that it wasn't just my binging and its consequences that puzzled me, how I felt abstinent. How I felt abstinent was a puzzle to me. So, you know, when I read this paragraph, it reminds me that death isn't necessarily the greatest loss for someone like me, a real compulsive overeater. The greatest loss for me was dying inside while I was still alive. Oh, that was painful. And that's why when someone pointed out to me, and I'm wrapping up, the text in the big book where it says, setting aside the drink problem, why was I making such a heavy going of life? Oh, that spoke of the unmanageability and the chaos that surrounded me and within me, even when the food was down. And when that became clear, then the necessity for the 12-step process became an urgency. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Leah M. Russ M., it is your turn, followed by Devorah S.
Good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes. Go ahead, Russ. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark, for your service. So, you may not believe it. Oh, wait. Russ M., compulsive overeater outside of Philly, and I'm recovering. You may not believe it, but many years ago, I was a professional wrestler, and I was on the road, and it was all about promotion. And when I read this, I see King Alcohol and the Four Horsemen. See, I was the dog boy to King Alcohol, you know, in wrestling terms. I was the underling to the Four Horsemen. They own me. They own me. And every time that I would fight on my own will to come back and get a name for myself in the world by diet, by restriction, by exercise, I'd get back into that food. And it wasn't just that. It was pitch dark, where there was no hope. And that those Four Horsemen would jump me, put their foot on my throat, and I would tap out. Until finally, in this January, I tapped out. I could not do it anymore. And, you know, through God's grace and these 12 steps, you know, I'll never be a king. I'll never be King Alcohol or anyone. But I can be a prince. I can be a prince. And there could be princesses too. And I learned that I'm loved and I can be free. I can be free through this program. And I can win, but not by life standards, by what God has for me, what my higher power has for me. You know, my freedom and being able to just enjoy what I have left on this earth through this program. So, yeah, it's a little crazy, a little short Sicilian guy from Philadelphia was on the road wrestling. But I identify so closely with this because I was the bag boy. I was slave to this for 44 and a half years of my life. My point is, if I can get free, anybody can. It's just, you know, you do got to tap out. You got to tap out and hand it over to God in this program. So thank you so much. Thank you so much. I pass.
Thank you, Russ M. Devorah S., it's your turn, followed by Lisa B.
Thank you so much. My name is Devorah S., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from New Jersey. Thank you all for being here and for this meeting. Well, I really relate to this paragraph and that chilling vapor, that loneliness settled in. I remember that so well. And for me, it was a dark, cold pit. And trying to climb out of that pit and seeing the sunlight. And it was there for years and years, starting in childhood. I was that fat kid, always wanting to get thin, always wanting to fit in, always wanting to be like everybody else. And I didn't get it. And it got into, you know, teenage years, adulthood. Being close to 300 pounds, coming into this program, being fat and miserable, getting abstinent, losing the weight, and then all of a sudden I'm feeling these four horsemen, the terror, the bewilderment, the frustration and despair, because I was abstinent and I didn't have a program. And I looked great. I lost all that weight, but it meant nothing because I was not recovered. And so I know what it feels like when you're in that dark place of loneliness and despair, but try it when you're abstinent. It's 10 times worse. So I'm so grateful today because I dug out of that dark, deep pit in abstinence and I saw the sunlight. Thank you, God. And I'm living today not in that place. You know, I'm living with a freedom around the food, a freedom around myself, freedom to know that, you know, there's a higher power out there that loves me. I'm not it. I don't have to run the show. And I have a fellowship of people who really understand me. I never encountered that before, you know, and when it says about unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. Now I'm involved with happy people who are, you know, who are not hurting themselves with the food, and yet we understand each other. And what a miracle that is today. And really, really grateful to be part of this fellowship and to walk these pages with you. And to live another day together. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Devora S. Lisa B., it's your turn, followed by Jeanette F.
Good morning. This is Lisa B., a recovered compulsive overeater in Greenville, South Carolina. Thank you for this meeting, and thank you for everyone that's here. The line that stands out for me is, some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. While with food, I was truly an isolator. Food is my true drug of no choice. For a few years, I did, with alcohol, seek out those sort of places, but I always gravitated right back to the food. And when it talks about the four horsemen and terror, I saw that for many years before my food took me to the depths. I saw that on my beautiful brother's face, who struggled with cocaine. So I recognized that in him, and then I began to see it in myself with where food took me. But, you know, the places that I sought out trying to get understanding and get well is, it reminds me, and there is a solution. It says, some drinkers have excuses with which they are satisfied part of the time, but in their hearts, they really do not know why they do it. Well, that's how I felt. But for years, I sought out spirituality. I sought out prayer and meditation. I sought out self-help. I sought out therapy. And those things did help me get a little bit of a grasp. But it really, really wasn't what gave me the true answer. I needed to meet someone in whom the problem had been solved. Ideally, for me, what worked is meeting another compulsive overeater. I did go to AA meetings for years, trying to get help with my food, and I know that that's probably helped many people, but for me, the denial was so thick for me. I kept trying to think, well, I'm really not that bad. But, you know, in spiritual experience, in the Appendix 2, it says in our big book, what often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource. And, you know, that's what I needed always, because from a very young age, even without being in the food or alcohol or anything else, just living life, life was terrifying for me. I felt the four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. And also, I felt loneliness always. I just always felt loneliness around me. I never could feel, you know, the positive things of life. And it's really this miracle of this ship of a book, meeting someone in whom the problem has been solved and learning about entire abstinence as it's based in the doctor's opinion. And then working these steps truly, like my life depends on it, not saying, you know, I don't know if I want to do this, I want to do that. Really getting that this is, it is death. It is death. This disease is death, but it's slowly and it's subtly. It's death on the layaway policy. And living these steps and then having the miracle happen. So with that, I pass.
Thank you, Lisa B. Jeanette F., it's your turn.
Hi, this is Jeanette S. as in Sam, recovering from Newburgh, New York. The part that struck me today was the less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. From a young age, I always thought I was on the wrong planet. Everything was the opposite of what I thought it should be, or what I was taught it should be, or what I somehow absorbed that it should be. And I really didn't care if people tolerated me or not. It came to the point where I was just withdrawing. And I recently realized that I was becoming agoraphobic. I'm one of those people that can hide behind my smiling face. I can be look like I'm quite gregarious, as it says in here, we're good actors. And I would put on my, with my clothing and my jewelry and my makeup, I would put on my mask and then go out. So I was hiding all the time. And what got me in here was it occurred to me, I wondered if my 40-year-old pistol permit was still valid. And that scared me. That really scared me. And then I finally heard somebody say the word recovered. If you're recovered, really say you're recovered in your, and don't be apologetic about it in your face-to-face meetings. That's what I needed to hear. I didn't hear that anywhere else. And I was about to leave again from OA, because I didn't want to be one of these suffering, recovering people all my rest of my life. I want to be recovered. And I finally heard the word. And now, you know, I was one of those people that mention of things spiritual made me bristle with, well, not antagonism, but absolute rage. And today, I believe in a higher power. Thank you to people who, you know, guided me in that direction and said it was okay to just have an even a willingness to believe. And that was all I needed, was that crack for the light to get in. I'm so grateful for all of you and for my almost done with the steps here, almost through the whole cycle, and so I can live in 10, 11, and 12. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Jeanette S. Okay, we have time for two more shares. Who
Leia
would like
S.
to share?
Reva P.
Monica T.
Leia S. and Reva P. There we have
Thank
it.
You.
Leia S., please, go ahead.
Thank you so much. Some of us saw our sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. And that sentence is a little bit contradictory, because in the earlier part of the book, we're all talking about, oh, we used to get together and we used to binge our brains out. And here we're saying, oh, now we're looking for companionship because we want to be sober. And so it's a little, there's a difference. In the past, I used to have buddies that I used to eat and pig out with. And today, I look for buddies that can help me grow in my program, that can help me overcome these four bedevilments, the terror, the bewilderment, and the despair. I try as much as possible. I'm not going to say we're all human. We do have fears. And when I overcome those fears, and when I have the feeling of euphoria, it's like very, very spiritual. That's when I look to share with all you guys. That's when I look for your companionship to make you understand that this is more, far outweighs anything that I have ever experienced before. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Leah S. Reva P., it is your turn.
Good morning. It's Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto. It strikes me that the chapter is setting up a vision for me, but it's starting off in the first few paragraphs reminding me what it was like. And why do I need to remember what it was like? I need to remember because after years of abstinence and living in the steps, I need to remember that it is an only 24-hour reprieve and that this is what it was like. When I look at people eating what are my binge ingredients or binge foods, it doesn't bother me because this is what it was like when I ingested those things. And I will never get the effect that I was chasing. What I will get is loneliness, despair, the four horsemen. And I will not get that effect if I'm abstinent only and running my life on self-will either. And it's really important to remember that maybe there was a time that I could handle certain things, but I broke the barometer and I can never go back. And I love the analogy I heard at a meeting here that I was a cucumber, I am now a pickle, I can never, ever go back to a cucumber. It's done, over. And the only thing I will get is the four horsemen. And you know, in the moment, I might forget when I have that mental twist, I might forget. The only defense is the spiritual experience as a result of working the steps. So I love that it's driving home. Like, don't even try. It's not going to work. And I have to remember that it never, ever worked the way it was. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Rita P. There are 3 minutes left, so I'm going to ask if there's one person who'd like to share for 2 minutes.
Monica T.
Monica T., please go ahead.
Good morning, Mara. Good morning, everyone. My name is Monica T. Please time me, okay? And I'm
Alrighty.
Just going to piggyback here on what was just said. So the chapter says, a vision for you. What's a vision? Ability to see. Something that you imagine. A picture you see in your mind. So at the beginning of this chapter here, this is not a very nice picture. This is not a very nice vision we're looking at here. They're wanting to hammer it over the head again, Monica. This is what you are. This is where you were. This is what you come from. You know, isolation, fear. Momentarily, it says we did find companionship, approval, or oblivion. And oblivion is unconsciousness and unawareness. You know, I used to eat to oblivion. But you know what the problem with oblivion is? I woke up. And then what did I see? Terror, which is intense fear, panic, bewilderment, extreme confusion of the mind, frustration, deep, chronic sense of insecurity, despair, hopelessness. You know, not a very happy vision. And I need to know this in my gut, that this is what this disease does to me. And if I continue to pick up allergic food, this is where I'm going to continue to be. So they're just really hammering it home here. You know, this is the vision you were. But they're going to give us a lot of hope because the chapter is a vision for you. They've got a different vision for us. And wow, you know, beyond my wildest dreams as a result of doing the steps, working the steps, I have and am experiencing a different vision. And I thank you.
Thank you, Monica T., for taking us out this morning. Okay, so thank you to everyone who shared. Just great shares, and I'm a numbers person, kind of geeky. We have 15 people share this morning, and I've got 323 of my best friends on the line with me this morning. So thank you all for being here and for sharing and giving of yourselves. Today's share ID, Wednesday, September 27th, is 10,478. 10478. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Stacy C., please read that for us.
Good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. This has been a great meeting for me today. Thank you. Stacy C. from Louisiana, recovering. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.